Eternity's Echo, The Last Stand of JFK. The scene shifts to the Oval Office of the White House, a formal and tense atmosphere. President John F. Kennedy sits at the head of the table with Bobby Kennedy, the Attorney General, his brother, Robert McNamara, the Secretary of Defense, and the Secretary of State, Dean Rusk, and other members of the Select Executive Committee. They're seated around a table, and Hugh Everett III stands at the end of the room, feeling slightly out of place amongst all the political and military heavyweights. Kennedy addresses the gathering. "Thank you for being here, gentlemen. We're all aware of the gravity of our situation with the Soviets, and today I want to introduce you to Dr. Hugh Everett from Princeton University. His work might give us a new perspective on the decisions we're about to make." Bobby, in an effort to make Everett feel more welcome, says, "Hugh, I think it's important for the committee to hear about your many worlds theory. Can you explain how you came across it and why it might be relevant to our situation?" Dr. Hugh Everett III isn't shy when it comes to talking at meetings amongst government officials. He's worked on several different teams planning a nuclear war. Everett had previously been tasked with developing a first strike strategy against the Soviet Union, but he had never met with the president and his inner circle.
thank you, Mr. President and Mr. Attorney General. The many worlds theory that I developed in my work in mathematics, it's an interpretation of quantum mechanics, a field that deals with tiny particles, atoms in the universe. And we always thought that when we observe something, like an electron, it has to choose a single outcome, a single reality. I mean, something can't be in two different places at the same time, right?
Everett draws nods from around the room. "But through my research, from my mathematical work, I discovered this isn't the case. Instead, every possible outcome of a situation, it actually occurs. Only the different outcomes occur in separate parallel realities. So that electron is actually in one place in this world and in another place in a different world. But both possibilities exist simultaneously and continue in its own separate reality." Everett pauses, looks around the room. "Have I lost anyone yet? Because this is not what people are generally used to hearing." And he smiles with understanding, knowing that he's proposing a concept which is fantastical. "Assuming what you say is true, well, then go on," Dean Rusk says. And Everett continues, "Well, that's half of what I was able to discover. With that comes the idea that for every decision we make, there's another version of it where we make a different decision, and that forms a reality, a different world." Defense Secretary Robert McNamara looks skeptical. "So you're saying that if I decide to skip breakfast on the way to the White House, that's going to create one world, and if I eat the breakfast at home, that's going to create another world?" "Doesn't sound exactly traditional." Everett nods. "Well, it isn't. But every decision, every action causes a split of sorts in the universe. It's a natural split. And these different decisions of reality or where the possibilities play out. So the one where you ate breakfast at home, that's one reality. The one where you skipped breakfast, that's a second reality. And what that means is that our world is just one of many other worlds, and they're all connected by the outcomes of our decisions." Dean Rusk interrupts. "Well, that's all fine and good, Dr. Everett, but how does that apply to the fact that we have a Soviet buildup in Cuba of atomic missiles?" "Well, it means that what happens here, what we decide here, doesn't just affect our world. It has implications that could spill out into all these other worlds as well, and the consequences of our actions could ripple across all
of these connected realities. There's a silence for several moments as the room considers the weight of what Dr. Everett is saying. Secretary McNamara, curious, says, Dr. Everett, where are you currently based in case we need further consultation? Well, I'm officially with the Department of Defense in Washington, but I spend a lot of time at Princeton, my alma mater, where I continue my research and consult on various projects. And Princeton has been invaluable with helping me to develop these ideas. I teach there as well. The president leans forward, intense. So you're telling us that the decisions we make in this room here and now could have consequences for our world and beyond? And Everett responds, yes, Mr. President. The stakes are a lot higher than we might have ever considered when it comes to potential nuclear exchanges. As the meeting concludes, the implications of what they've just heard leaves the room heavy with thought. President Kennedy and his advisors are left to ponder the gravity of their decisions, not just for the fate of the world, the Earth, but for the countless other realities intertwined with their own. Bobby, Jack, and Everett leave the room together, and this hints perhaps at a more personal connection that might come in the future. The following day after the Oval Office meeting, the scene shifts to Princeton University in Princeton, New Jersey. It's a crisp autumn day in 1962. The atmosphere, though, is tense, with the crisis still looming. Jack Kennedy and Bobby walk across the campus, approaching the building where they are to meet Dr. Hugh Everett III. Bobby, I thought it was better to come out here to talk to him in Princeton than to see him in Washington, says the president. Bobby concurs. I agree, Jack. It's good to get away from all the brass and the bureaucrats for once, but I know that we had follow-up questions, things we needed to discuss candidly without everyone listening in. While grim, Jack smiles slightly. Sometimes to really understand a man's thinking, you have to meet him on his own turf. For security purposes and to avoid eavesdropping, John, Bobby, and Hugh Everett decide to leave the building that he works in and walk across the campus of Princeton. There's the soft rustling of leaves, occasional college sounds, and the murmurings of students. As they bask in the crisp fall weather, Jack stops and notices a group of students throwing a football around. Best way to clear the brain, you know, he says to Everett. Bobby and I always like to toss around the football at the White House whenever things get too heavy. Bobby adds, which means these days we're tossing it around a whole lot. Bobby gestures to the students who are throwing the pigskin around and they decide to throw it over to the president. It loosens the mood between the three men as Jack holds the football in his hands. The president lobs a pass over to his brother Bobby, who in turn throws it to Everett, who's surprised but catches it. Hey, come on, Hugh. You're a scientist, but you have to know how to throw a football, Bobby says. Everett hesitates, then flips a pass over to the president, and he smiles. I never thought my theories would be discussed over a catch, Mr. President. And JFK tosses the ball back at him. It's good to remind ourselves that we're still human, Hugh, especially when we're dealing with matters that could affect all of humanity, and perhaps more, right? They continue tossing the football, creating a casual but serious atmosphere. Hugh, I've been briefed on your work, and you've told us about it, the many worlds theory. It's hard to grasp, but I'm beginning to understand. You see, we're facing a potential nuclear war, something that could destroy not just our world, but perhaps all the worlds. Everett pauses as he catches the ball and then holds on to it as he speaks. Mr. President, the idea that a subatomic particle can exist in two places at once, it's a strange idea, but it's been proven. What's even more unsettling is that even after we observe it, the other possibility doesn't just vanish. It continues to exist just somewhere else. So our decision to strike or not to strike, we're not just deciding the fate of our world, but many worlds.
And Everett says, in essence, yes. The choices we make here might resonate through countless other realities. Even if we avert disaster in this world, another one might not be so fortunate. So our decisions are so crucial. Bobby, serious but still tossing the football, says, so what you're saying, Hugh, is that a nuclear exchange here could set off a chain reaction across the whole universe? And Everett says, yes, and that's what made me realize the true magnitude of mutually assured destruction. It's not just about everything, it's about everywhere. Jack catches the football, and then his eyes grow keen as he gazes at Everett. Off the record, Hugh, and between us, the three of us, do you believe that a nuclear war could cause unimaginable damage and across all the walls? And Everett says, Mr. President, I've studied this more than anyone, and in my heart, yes, I believe the repercussion would be endless, reverberating across the entire universe. The destruction would be greater than anyone could ever imagine. The three men start to walk back, the football now at rest. Thank you, Hugh, JFK says. This is the kind of insight I needed. We're not just fighting to save the world. We're fighting to save something far bigger.